Have you ever felt radically alive? Just wow. Have you felt that sense of awe and wonder and oh my? And have you felt radically loved? Held in something so large you almost disappeared? And have you felt radical love? Have you wanted nothing more than to cherish another or even the world itself? Have you felt these ways? I have. I felt it on the shore of the river when we sang. I felt it at mile 12, though not at mile 9. You got to work through there to get there. I felt it in worship when a word or a beat or a heart was shared. I felt it when my hour-old child reached out and grabbed my pinky finger and held on. She turned 11 this week, and I remember that moment like it was yesterday. I felt it when bodies intertwined, and I felt it when the sun rose over the fields, and standing on ancient Roman roads and holding the hand of one more elder as their life slipped away. I felt it when the kettle drums sound and the chorus swells and you say, "Man alive!" And I felt it when we marched and when we defied an unjust law and when we won and when we struggled and lost, but we kept at it. Man alive! Have you felt that way? Surprised and loved at once? Bowled over by wonder and held caught by something greater than you. When you notice, as if out of the corner of your eye, that the world is drop-dead gorgeous and deeply tragic all at once. And you are moved to love it even more. Have you felt that way? Awe means both wonder and veneration, both surprise and love. Diane's testimony and those moments of wonder on her trip and how she saw love put into practice as a response to that wonder got me thinking about this relationship between wow and yes, between wonder and love, between surprise and service. And then it hit me. If you look up the word A-G-A-P-E in the dictionary, there are two entries. Agape. One, adjective, of the mouth, wide open, especially in surprise or wonder. From the English, gape, or open. Agape. Two, noun, Christian love. From the ancient Greek, agape, selfless love. Well, how about that? We're doing the four ancient Greek words for love this month: philia, friendship; eros, desire; storge, family love; and agape, selfless love. The two different pronunciations and meanings of A-G-A-P-E come from two totally different languages. Their origins are not related, and yet I detect the hand of Cocopelli, the god of mischief. For there is a connection between wonder and love. Have you ever felt radically alive? And did you not also feel then radically loved? The father of liberal theology, Friedrich Schleiermacher, said that religion begins with a feeling, a precognitive feeling of absolute dependence, a feeling of wonder. This was a radical idea a few hundred years ago. He said, religion doesn't start with a book or a ritual or whatever. It starts with a feeling of wow, or similar but more colorful expressions, if you will. And we try to understand it. We try to name it. Some try to control it because that feeling is overwhelming. If we felt it all the time, we would never get the laundry done, let alone pay our taxes. But we start there, feeling alive, feeling love that is more than we can grasp, feeling more connected than we can name, feeling wonder that courses through our veins and imprints forever on our memories. What makes you feel alive? I've always loved Robert Fulghum's reflection on the Ninth Symphony. Maybe that isn't your particular piece of music, but I bet you have something like that. Something you use to climb out of lows so low you need extension ladders for. Something that makes you feel alive. Maybe it's Beethoven, maybe it's the Rolling Stones, maybe it's Kendrick Lamar, a piece of music that makes you say yes. Or maybe you have a place you go where the sun rises in a particular way. Or a book of poetry you turn to, or a prayer you recite, or someone whose voice you know will envelop you in love. A short coda to Fulghum's story, by the way. He got the chance later to conduct the symphony. He was invited by the Minnesota Orchestra to do it, but he discovered that it was way, way, way harder than he imagined. It turned out that the Minnesota Orchestra at the time was in a bit of a troubled state. And so the promoter said, well, we'll do this and it'll get people there. And so they booked it and then they finally hired a conductor because the one they had left. And the new conductor said, you did what? This is the hardest piece to conduct in the entire canon of classical music. But he worked at it, Fulghum did. He worked for months. It was a 3-night performance. He got through the first night barely. He rushed it. He said it was the fastest performance of the Ninth Symphony on record. The second was barely better. The third night, he said it was not right for the musicians and the choir to be led by such an amateur on a piece they would probably never perform in public again. It is so hard to do. They would only do it once. So he handed over the baton to the actual conductor, and Fulghum slipped in with the tenors in the back of the choir. And in another later book he published, he says this of that third night, it was the orchestra's finest night. The musicians were finally united. The chorus and soloists poured out a mighty sound. For a time, all of us in the hall could believe in the power of the human spirit to overcome evil. Beethoven lived. We lived. Nothing grander could be said or done at that moment in our lives. At the end, when that marbled music rumbled down the hill of the heart like a landslide, people cheered their lungs out, pounded their hands together, hugged each other, threw flowers, and wept. What a night. What a world. What a life. Yes. Sometimes love calls us to step back, to turn, to say, wait. Love must guide us, not greed or pride, not a desire to be admired for our love. If you cannot sing like angels, and God knows I can't, if you cannot speak before thousands, well, I could do that. But that's not the point, is it? For though we may speak with bravest fire, if we have not love within, it is sounding brass. Agape calls us to move with a selfless love, a love for something larger than our own desire, a love for the world writ large. A love for humanity, even especially a love for the stranger. It calls us to be guided by a love for the holy, for God, for the mystery. Not for what is easy, not for idols, but for what is real, something larger than ourselves. I asked on social media for examples of when folks felt that sense of awe, that sense of love, that sense of, wow, thank you, OMG. I loved what people shared. Starlings in flight, you've seen that pattern they make? A hug, the flowers of a parent gone but still blooming. Music, man alive. The woods, lots of pictures of kids. as it should be. Nature, life, art, beauty, wonder, the stars, the universe, love, love, love. A love so large we can barely stand it. A love that makes us surrender to that larger power. A love that makes us lose ourselves in the beauty of the moment, to fall into the stars, to become one with the holy. And yet, here, in this moment of ecstasy, I want to tread carefully. Right here. Right here is the danger. The danger of selfless love. Some of you know. Some of you know too well. Because this love, this agape, this so-called selfless love can be a tool of oppression. It can be, give up your desire, give up your dignity, give up your safety for the other, for the king, for the priest, for the husband, for the nation, for death. The emperors of Europe, when they wanted the fourth and fifth sons of each family to go off to the Crusades and die rather than fight with their older siblings for the land, they changed a god of love into a god of war. They said, be like Jesus and die. This is not love. This is not love. No one is outside the circle of love, and it is not love if you are told to sacrifice for someone else's welfare, for their fantasies or convenience. That's not love. What is love? It's not when you get hurt. It's not. What is holy love? It's not when you get hurt for someone else's ease. This is deadly serious business. Some of you know too well. Those who would dominate others, they praise the sacrificial love of their victims. No more. No more. I read an article this week about the kids from Parkland, Emma Gonzalez and Cameron Caskey and all those kids who are speaking up and refuse to behave. The article was titled, Isaac Refuses. Isaac in the Bible is placed by his father Abraham at God's instruction on the sacrificial altar. God tells Abraham, have faith. Kill your son. He prepares. At the last minute, God tells Abraham not to do it, but Abraham would have. His faith is so strong. That's the supposed moral of the story. The article was titled, Isaac Refuses. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students say no to child sacrifice. I read that title and I wept. What Emma and Cameron and the rest are saying loud and clear is, that's not love. We are not your Isaac. And maybe more are listening than have before. That would be a welcome change. After a white supremacist killed 9 worshipers at Mother Emanuel Church, some were awfully quick to emphasize and praise those black folks who spoke of forgiveness. There was a lot less praise for those who spoke of justice. No more. I want this to be a no more moment. I want this to be a moment when Isaac refuses. When school children refuse to be sacrificed for the love of guns, when women refuse to be sacrificed for toxic masculinity, when people of color refuse to be sacrificed for white supremacy, when indigenous people refuse to be sacrificed for manifest destiny, when GLBTQ people refuse to be sacrificed for heteronormativity or transphobia, when poor people refuse to be sacrificed for the god of wealth. That's what I want this moment to be. Isaac refuses. When they refuse, those who refuse to be Isaac to the God of death, they embody love, the love of life, to love life more than death, to love beauty more than pain, to love freedom more than power. This is love, to refuse, and I could not love them more. In the end, this is the essential question. Indeed, I think it is everything. Everything that matters is contained in this question. What do you do with your feeling of wondrous love? Because we have these moments. What do you do with that feeling? How does it change you? What does it make you do? How then shall you live? The word agape is used a lot in the Christian Bible. One of the places it is used is Luke 10, 25 to 37. An expert in the law questions Jesus, "What shall I do with this feeling of holy awe? How shall I live? What am I to do?" And Jesus says, "Well, what does it say in the scripture?" And the man answers, "Love," agape is the word there, "love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength, and all your mind, and love," agape is the word, "love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus says, "That's good. That's it. Do that." The man replies, "Who is my neighbor?" And you know how that story goes. The one you didn't expect. The outcast, the one who loves. What do you do with that feeling of wow, with that feeling of love, with a feeling of being connected to all that is, with a feeling of man alive? What do you do with that one wild and precious life? When you realize deep in your bones, in your veins, that no one is outside the circle of love, no one is outside the circle of love, what do? You do justice. You do justice. You extend the circle. You answer the call of love to love more. You break down the barriers. You offer not your sacrifice, but your heart. You do justice. Cornel West reminds us that justice is what love looks like in public, and that is what agape calls us to. Oh, the stars are wondrous, and the music is awe-inspiring, and the moments of beauty lift our soul, and we are blown away by a power beyond our naming, and we rise, and we move, and we sing, and we do. We do justice, we do right, we extend the circle of love wider and wider until no one is left behind. What is love? It is when your friend is there for you. It's what makes your toes tingle, how your family calls you into being. It's when the Spirit grabs hold and will not let you go. What is love? It's when you pick up the phone. It's when you march. It's when you teach children to love. It is when you refuse to be Isaac and when you refuse to be Abraham. It is when you love your neighbor. It's when you love yourself. It's when you believe that we are better than this. It is when you help make us better than this. It is when you get up and do it again. It's when you vote, it's when you give, it's when you listen, it's when you serve. It is when you do what is right, even if it's hard. It is when love becomes justice. It is when you answer the call. Let us answer. Let us say, man alive. Let us say, yes. Let us say, hallelujah. And let us sing, rise in body or spirit. We'll sing 1014, the words answering the call of love. have extinguished our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. I hope you might join us and invite your friends over the month of March as we explore the topic of humility. How can we be great at being humble? The words of our benediction are attributed to the Reverend John Murray, the founder of Universalism in America. Go out into the highways and byways. Give the people something of your new vision. You may possess a small light, but uncover it, let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women and all people. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. We'll sing together, Go Your Way in Peace. We'll sing it through twice.